This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Let's go around the horn as we do pleasantries to start the show. Good morning, Chris Canty, on what is a beautiful Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave. Good morning, Rico. I'm doing well this morning. Gerrit Cole looked mighty sharp last night in his tune-up start before the postseason, so I'm feeling pretty good right now. My Lakers let me down a little bit last night. Didn't have the energy against the Nuggets, allowed them to get back in this series. But overall, Dave, I'm feeling pretty good about my teams.
Okay, good. And Rick, how you feeling? How you doing? Tell us.
How you doing, Dave? Chris? I'm a little bit nervous, Dave, to be honest. I'm a little bit nervous.
What are you nervous about?
Well, that's a huge start for Michael Walker tonight. Huge.
You jerk.
I mean, if he doesn't pitch well tonight, I don't know what the repercussions of this one are.
Waka, waka.
Oh, man. Good night of sports, though. Good night of sports. Good.
Every night is a good night of sports. Every night is jam-packed with different stuff. It's really, it's like we've never seen before. Because you know what, guys? We have never seen anything like this before.
No, it's a lot.
Right?
I mean, it's a lot. No, you're 100% right. I mean, it's winding down, too, if you think about it, man. I mean, Western Conference Finals in the NBA.
Yeah. NHL is almost done. Should be over within 10 days at the most, right? NBA's got a couple more weeks, and then we'll then we ramp up into the baseball playoffs starting next week.
Yeah, I can't wait for these playoffs. Can't
right?
wait. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I have a question
exactly
for you.
What?
And it's sincere, and I probably should ask you off the air because I'm not sure of it, and Chris, you can answer too if you know it. First round, best of three, right?
Correct.
Second round is it best of five or best of
seven? Five.
Best of five.
Yeah.
And then it goes best of seven, and then, of course, the World Series best of seven.
3-5, 7-7. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if the Yankees were to get by, say, Minnesota, for argument's sake, and move on to play Tampa, that's a best of five series.
Yes.
Okay.
In the bubble. Best of five in the bubble.
Right. Well, everything past the first round goes to the bubble, right?
Correct.
Yes. Okay. All right. Now I think we fully understand.
I can tell you one thing. I mean, if the Yankees, I mean, you're talking about a team that's been carried with all the injuries, been carried for the most part by DJ LeMahieu and Luke Voit. You score 12 runs and those guys do nothing offensively in the game. That's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, I think you have to feel good about the Yankees now, right? Heading into the postseason. Chris, you must feel positive about it.
Yeah, I mean, they've won 11 of their last 13 games, and you're starting to see positive signs from guys that you know that you're going to be dependent on. Aaron Judge had a multi-hit game last night. It was his first game with three hits since August 8th. He was in a 2-of-17 slump since coming off the IL. And, you know, you feel good about where he's at right now because it seems like he's got his timing down. I mean, Gerrit Cole looks great with Higashioka behind the plate. And, you know, that's what you paid $324 million for a guy to give you seven innings of one-run ball to get a lot of swings and misses. I think he had seven strikeouts, no walks, and 11 ground ball outs. So that was phenomenal. I mean, that's exactly what you're looking for from him. So you want everybody to feel good about where they're at going into the postseason. Momentum matters in every sport when you talk about playoffs. And right now you like the way that the Yankees have been playing baseball. So now it's just a matter of keeping that going and fingers crossed that Minnesota stumbles against the Reds in that three-game set to end their regular season. And we can talk about that three-game set for the first round of the postseason being at Yankee Stadium rather than being in Minnesota.
I think the biggest thing for the Yankees, obviously, and we've said this the entire time, is health. But more important than just being healthy and being in the lineup is making sure that you're clicking on all cylinders when the postseason does hit. And right now, the way that, you know, Judge is starting to swing the bat, the way that, you know, Gleyber Torres is swinging the bat, Urshela has been on fire. I mean, top to bottom, when you look at the lineup they're going to throw out.
It's the best lineup in baseball.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you talk about batting Clint Frazier in the 8 or 9 spot. Clint Frazier on a good team would be hitting 4 or 5.
No, I said that. I mean, I was looking at the lineups. I mean, I think it was the Friday game. Clint Frazier was batting 9th. I mean, that's the kind of length you're talking about in this lineup. And especially, I mean, and if all of a sudden now, I mean, Higashioka can contribute offensively the way he's done over the past couple games, you know, catching for Gerrit Cole, that's another added positive.
I thought that was a home run last night. Maybe
they
I'm just
tell.
Wrong. I thought it was a home run. Like, it looked like it hit the yellow line. I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Well, no, it's got to hit the yellow line. If it hit the yellow line, hit the wall behind it and came in, it's a home run. If it just hits the yellow line, that's not a home run.
Yeah, I thought it skipped off the top of the yellow line, hit the back wall, and then bounced back in. But that's what it looked like. Either way, it was a two-run double. I mean, the guy had an extra base hit, and he drove in two runs. So, I mean, the way he's swinging the bat, he's not a liability. and him being behind the plate makes your best pitcher perform at his best.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, that, and that's what you need. You're even if you're, and I don't even know that you do at this point. You probably do just in potential. But if you sacrifice some offense for the better, for to make your stud pitcher feel comfortable, I think you have to do that every day of the week, and that's what the Yankees will do moving forward here.
Yeah, well, Kay brought up the point in last night's game, and he said, well, if you get to a game seven in one of these series and you're going to use Gerrit Cole, I mean, you have to have Higashioka behind the plate. Like, you just have to. I mean, as much as you respect what Gary Sanchez brings to the table offensively, I think it's more important to have Gerrit Cole at his very best than looking at your lineup and saying that you need more offense.
Well, it is. I mean, even if – and you're not slight on offense to begin with, but you need your best pitcher to be – at his most comfortable. And he's at his most comfortable, clearly, with Higashioka behind the plate.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, when you look at, I mean, and Higashioka's been fine offensively. He's been good offensively, actually. I mean, the three home run game, I mean, had two hits last night. But it's, I mean, you're not expecting to need that many runs when Gerrit Cole has the ball anyway. It's run prevention. I mean, you're trying to prevent runs at that point. And Higashioka, I mean, batting ninth, I mean, you still have, I mean, 1-8 is daunting. Hicks is swinging the bat well. They were 8-11 with runners in scoring position last night.
Yeah, they were dominant.
Sure, I mean, it's ridiculous.
They're good. I mean, it's a really good team. You look at that lineup. They have the best lineup in baseball. You could argue they're the best starting pitcher heading into the postseason, right? I mean, DeGrom's not going to go. We'll see if Bauer or those guys go. But regardless, I mean, they have it.
Bieber's pretty nasty.
Bieber is really, really good. But they have a clear number one. Their bullpen is really, really good. The back end of their bullpen is as good as any team. I mean, the Yankees are built for the postseason. So they scuffled a little bit in the regular season. Okay, it stinks. But if there's any year that you don't want to have that one seed, and you're fine having the four or the five, this would be the year. I mean, there's no home field advantage, so this is the year that you can afford to be the four or the five seed.
Yeah, I mean, the only home field advantage is in the first round, and that's just because you don't have to travel. But then after that, everybody has to go down to the bubble. So, I mean, it's kind of like you're on even ground then. So, I mean, I guess you could say that the Yankees have as good a chance as anybody. I mean, coming into this season, we thought that it was going to be the Dodgers and the Yankees on this collision course, and there's nothing to say that that's not going to happen, but it's a little bit different now that we're talking about all of these playoff games or the majority of the playoff games being in the bubble just because you don't have the off days. And so you're going to rely on some of the guys on the back end of your rotation that you didn't think would see postseason action, or at least not postseason starts.
I think, I mean, one of the only questions really headed into, I mean, if everyone's healthy headed into that first series is, you know, who gets the ball for game three? Because Hap's pitched well. Does it end up being Jay Hap?
Oh, I don't love that.
I don't trust Jay Happ.
I mean, Jay Happ with a short leash. I mean, he's pitched well, man.
You're right, he has. But in a big spot, I mean, in that first series, if I'm 1-1 against whoever and I got to go Jay Happ, I don't love that.
Yeah, I feel great about that.
Yeah, that's
but where do you go, I guess, is the question, right? Yeah, is there a better option? I don't know that there is.
And that's the issue. I mean, Davey Garcia got hit hard his last start. I mean, I don't know how much you trust Jordan Montgomery. I mean, you got the seasoned veteran in Jay Happ. Give him a short leash.
The point is, you're going to have to rely on one of those guys at a minimum, and you didn't think that that was going to be the case coming into the season. That's the part of this that kind of makes it a little sticky. But, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, if you have one of those guys struggle, it's going to be up to the bullpen and the lineup to pick those guys up.
I mean, there's not many concerns. I mean, let's be honest. We're nitpicking.
No, there's not.
The concerns are who gets the ball in game three. And, I mean, my only concern with Gerrit Cole is going up against the Twins team is the amount of home runs he's given up this season. That's it.
Yes, but I still think you trust him in a big spot.
Oh, no, of course. You have no choice. Of course you trust him. I'm saying that would be one of the things we've seen this season with Gerrit Cole that could be a problem going
against
the
Minnesota
Twins.
Yes, if there was going to be a negative or a potential downfall, that would be it, yes. But I don't think you go into the postseason thinking, the home runs he allows is going to get in his way. He's great. He's a dominant pitcher.
And his last three starts have been awesome.
Awesome. Absolutely.
Thank
awesome.
God, because otherwise Canty would have been, I mean, he'd been ruined for today.
A mess, an absolute mess. But they are going to need, whether it's the first series or the second series or at some point, they're going to need the you know, Davey Garcia, the Jay Happ, the Jordan Montgomerys of the world to come up big moving forward in the postseason. They are going to need that.
Yeah, with no James Paxton, someone's going to have to step up.
Yep.
That goes without saying. And they've had success using an opener, too. If that's something they want to decide to do, too, they've had success using the opener.
But then that's putting a lot on your bullpen, though.
No, it is, especially with no days off. That's the, that's I mean, that's the that's other thing that becomes bullpen. Interesting now. Is I mean, this is, we, I mean, we said this before the season that because it's only 60 games, the pandemic and everything else, is that there'd be a lot more emphasis on the manager. I think especially now with no days off, how you manage your bullpen and everything else. When mm-hmm. I mean, when you take your starter out, I mean, there's going to have to be. This can't just be. Oh, this is the right lane for this guy. This has to be. I mean, there's got to be some feel when you're making these decisions.
Yeah, and you're also going to need guys like Loaisiga, like Sessa, to be able to, like Chad Green, to be able to give you multiple innings out of the bullpen. Mm-hmm. Like you're going to need
those
capable. Guys.
I mean, on any given night, any of those guys more than capable of doing that.
Oh, no question about it. But that's why it was important to get them opportunities down the stretch here and make sure that those guys understood the role that they were going to be playing for this team. Because you're not going to be able to have as quick a hook as you had in postseasons past with any of them, starters or bullpen arms. You just can't. You can't afford it. Because, again, you don't have any off days. So,
as long as they get
everyone on the lineup card. It'll be interesting to see how it
all plays out. As long as they make sure they get all the right pitches on the lineup card.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that eighth inning, that little eighth inning fiasco. Yeah.
Wasn't
great, but here's the thing, though, Rico, getting to see Zach Britton as your setup man in the eighth and then going to a closer. I mean, we know that's going to be Chapman, but, I mean, they used Adovino last night. But, I mean, that was kind of how you scripted, right, with a Garrett Cole start.
Of course.
If he can give you 6 or 7 innings strong, and then you can go with your setup man and then your closer.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
If he goes 7, Britton, Chapman, Dunn, that's pretty daunting. Right, and they stretched him out a little bit last night too. It'll be his last start before the postseason. That's
yeah. What do you have? 108 pitches, something like that.
Well over 100. That's daunting. It is. I mean, I would take in a game 7 with that setup. I would take nobody anywhere over the Yankees.
Yeah, and you're gonna
I would
need
agree
it too,
with that.
Though.
I feel pretty good about that.
To the earlier point, though, with no days off, I mean, you're gonna need Garrett Cole to give you that kind of length. Because I don't know. I mean, Tanaka's been great, but I mean, Tanaka's not, he hasn't given you much, he's not giving you a lot of innings in his
start.
I think
the most you could ask for from him is 5 innings, right? In a postseason start?
Yeah, I mean, they tend to have a quick hook with everyone but Garrett Cole.
Yeah.
So you'd like, I mean, your bullpen is as rested as humanly possible going mm-hmm. into games 2 and 3. Because you feel like you're going to have to use your bullpen in 2.
Yes.
And then who knows what will happen.
But you know what, Rico, to your point? But to that point, Rico, that's why I like what you saw from Davey Garcia up until that last start. Because, I mean, the guy was giving you 7 innings, and it looked relatively effortless. It didn't look like he was laboring to give you that kind of length. It looked natural for him. So, I mean, if you do trust him enough to give him a postseason start, I mean, you got to feel good about him being able to navigate the lineup.
No, I mean, the only question mark with Davey Garcia is, I mean, it's the postseason.
How is he going to react to the first time pitching in the postseason?
Yes. That's it.
I mean, it's a big stage.
I mean, because Severino was great during the regular season, and then, I mean.
Oh, that was bad. That wild card game was awful.
No, he was brutal. But is it different because you have no people in the stands? Like, maybe it's just a different feel for these guys.
No, it's all of it, man. No, it's just, it's just everything
just
that goes
knowing the
it.
Moment is huge, is
exactly.
bigger.
Yeah. Exactly right. I mean, it helps not having fans, but you feel it from the second you wake up in the morning. You feel it. It's different.
Like it's a different feel to the day, to the game,
yes.
to the moment. All right.
No, Dave, I mean, I used to get mad because I would always try to keep my routine exactly the same for every single game, regardless of the circumstances, right? Like whatever time I woke up, I ate, I napped, was always the same. What time I went to the rink. We get to game one of the playoffs. We had guys that would show up like 30 seconds before the 2 hours you were supposed to be before the game, they would show up on a regular season game like 30 seconds before that. Game one of the postseason, they're like 3.5 hours before the game they're showing up.
I'm like, just
what are we doing? Oh, it's a big game. Well, yeah, so were the 82 that we played before the postseason were big games too. I couldn't sleep. It's just everything ratchets up.
It's a different feel. It's a completely different feel. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. Guest on DCR Pier via the Shell Pendulum Performance Line. A couple of guests today, Rich Cimini. On the Jets at 9:30, Dan Graziano on the NFL at 10:30, and you have an observations ready to go for right after Dan, right?
You better believe it, baby.
2020, guys, continues to just be a year that you want to forget. I don't know if you just saw, this is all over the place now. Gale Sayers, at the age of 77, has passed away. So,
come on,
you
man.
Talk about one of the greats. I mean, he really was, and I know at this point, I mean, Gale Sayers was older. So a lot of people may not really know a lot of his game. He was like Barry Sanders before Barry Sanders. Like he was at that level on a horrendous, horrendous Chicago Bears team. He was a different kind of running back. And then, of course, everyone remembers him from the movie Brian's Song with Brian Piccolo and that relationship. But yeah, I mean, 2020 is like, I give up. I tap out here. It's unbelievable. So Gale Sayers, Chris, passes away at the age of 77.
That's a tough one, Dave. That's a tough one. Just recognizing everything that he meant to that Bears organization and then what he meant to the National Football League as a whole, man. That's just, that's a rough loss because you said it, man. I mean, this dude was special, man. The Kansas Comet, this dude was unbelievable. Some of the
I don't think a lot of people realize. I mean, you hear the name and you say, oh yeah, he was supposed to be an all-time great, but I don't think a lot of people realize how great, in fact, Gale Sayers was.
Well, because he was cut down in the prime of his career, Dave. I mean, after that ACL injury, he just was not the same guy. You know, that was one of those that you wish you could have seen the other side of that. Like, you wish that, you know, science had, you know, was able to get him right and get him back out there on the field, because he was just special to watch. I mean, just looking at all that old NFL films footage and seeing him do his thing. I mean, Dave, it was effortless almost the way that he ran the football.
Yeah. Kick returner.
You know what I mean? Just like you're right. It reminds you of Barry Sanders, but he was so smooth the way that he did it. It was just, I mean, if you haven't seen him or you're not familiar with it, do yourself a favor and look it up, because Gale Sayers was unbelievable.
Yeah, different level. But really, like Barry Sanders-esque before Barry Sanders, and he only played, I don't think he played into his 30s. I think he only played like a real, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and he blew out his knee, which is a knee injury that would not even cause him to, not as severe as Saquon Barkley's, I'll tell you that, but back in the day, it ruined him, and he was never able to get back. And I just brought up his stats, and he hurt his knee after he was 26, and played another 4 games after that, and that was it. Had another 40 carries after the age of 26, and that was it. So, Gale Sayers, sadly, Rick. Do you remember him at all? Have you seen highlights and stuff of him? Right?
No, I've seen highlights. I remember when Reggie Bush was at USC. The comp to Reggie Bush was Gale Sayers.
Yeah, that's right. It's Sanders. It's Reggie Bush. It's that type of running back, that like explosive, you know, you give him an inch and he takes it a mile.
He was a different kind of athlete.
Yeah.
I mean, it just stood out. Like when you watch highlights of him, and Chris, you're right. I mean, if you haven't seen Gale Sayers, watch some highlights of him. He was a different kind of athlete. Like, he was ahead of his time. He was a better athlete than everyone else.
Yes. You're right. We did not have athletes like that in the late 60s. Like, they weren't like that, where the they can get around the edge and take it to the house every single time, and he was like that. And then, I mean, talk about a movie. I mean, you've seen Brian's Song, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, there's no way you could watch that movie, especially you knowing you, and not weep at that movie. No, really.
I can't watch any movie and not cry now.
You watch Jumanji and you break down. I mean,
Jumanji,
over this,
you name it.
Needed to get into therapy like 3 days a week. That was one of the saddest movies you've ever seen.
You watch Trolls, I start crying.
Well, Trolls has emotional parts, but I mean, yeah.
Sonic the Hedgehog made me cry.
You cried the cartoon movies, don't you?
I'm a mush. Well, the kids like it. What do you mean? What am I going to do?
So do they ever look over and see you crying and they're like, Dad, come on, get a hold of yourself.
No, because they're like, I make sure I kind of like turn so that you can't tell that I'm actually crying. Like,
are there actual every single tears time, running down your face, though?
Yeah, I mean, these are alligator tears. The first big tear that drops out of my eye, it's like the second my wife can sense it. And she looks at me like, are you serious right now? Like, this is emotional stuff.
But
you know what happens when you have kids?
But at funerals, you laugh.
I get uncomfortable at funerals, yeah. Well, it's what happens when your brother walks up to give to do a reading, and he's got business cards falling out of his pocket, and then he forgets. Then he forgets what he's supposed to say, and he starts going, "Excuse me, what am I supposed to do?"
You know what I showed Ben yesterday? I haven't seen it in like 20 years. The Boom Goes the Dynamite kid. Do you remember that kid?
This is the first he's seen it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know how old that is now? That's got to be 20 years old.
Yeah, that is, you're right.
So I forget what he was talking about, awkward like broadcast. I was like, have you ever seen Boom Goes the Dynamite? He's like, no. So I brought it up and showed him. He was hysterical. That kid. So you talk about like your brother walking up being like, excuse me, hello, and like dropping things. That's that kid. The kid was it was the worst sportscast you've ever seen in your life.
He gets the rebound, brutal. Passes it to the man, shoots it, and boom goes the dynamite.
Passes it to the man. I love Santi. If you could get some clips during the show today, just like, you have to hear, he's so awkward and uncomfortable. He doesn't know what's happening, and then he like at moments he's like, oh God, like he can't stay up with the highlight, and he passes it to the man. It's It really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't sound like a highlight of a game. That sounds like more like the JPP 4th of July play-by-play.
Stop.
Hey, great. Thanks a lot for that look into sports, Brian.
And boom goes the dynamite.
And boom. He passes it to the man, and boom goes the dynamite. All right, speaking of the dynamite going boom, guys, after we got off the air yesterday, the ratings for the Jets game came out. Did you see what they were? That was the worst-rated Jets regular season game in the history of the franchise.
Yeah, it was bad, Surprise Dave. You? I think the Giants in the same time slot double up the Jets.
Yeah, more than double them. And the Giants didn't do a great number to begin with, but the Jets did a number that's like that's Yankees numbers. I think they did a 3-9. Yankees will do like a 2-5 for 162 games or a 2-3. Like a 3-9 is it's awful. I mean, people just they don't want to watch this team.
Well, Dave, I mean, the San Francisco 49ers rolled off the bus and had 7 points on the scoreboard. I mean, if you're a Jets fan and you're tuning in at 1 o'clock, I mean, the opposing team has already got seven. What kind of day you think it's going to be for your team? You don't want to sit in front of the TV and watch that. You got better things to do with your NFL Sunday.
There's only
16 of them.
You can
watch Red Zone. You can watch the Giants. You can watch anything else. Falcons, Cowboys. You can watch anything else other than the Jets get pummeled by the 49ers.
I get it, but there's only 16 of them. And you'd figure that as bad as it gets, you as kind of a labor of love, you would sit
there.
Dave,
you say it's only 16 of them. I've already watched two, and I'm all set. If this wasn't my job, I wouldn't watch any more Jets games because I know how they're going to go. They're going to be awful this year. This is going to be maybe a 2 or 3 win team. Maybe. And you're talking about them having a top 3 pick, in which they're probably going to move off of Sam Darnold. So what's the point in watching him anymore this season anyway? That's where the Jets are at. 2 weeks into the season, we're already talking about the moves that they're going to have to make in order to start this rebuild and get this thing back on the rails. That's where they're at. Because of a decision that Chris Johnson made a couple of years ago. We're going to fire Todd Bowles, we're going to keep Mike Maccagnan, and we're going to allow him to go draft this quarterback, and then we're going to allow him to go spend all this money in free agency, and then as soon as that's done, we're going to fire him too.
You know, why at that point, though, wouldn't you have just decided, you know what, I don't think Todd Bowles is going to be the fit. We're going to draft the quarterback, so we want an offensive-minded head coach. He's on shaky ground to begin with. Why wouldn't you make the move then?
Because they're not functional.
Coach with the quarterback.
Because they're not functional. I mean, how can we be surprised that a dysfunctional organization makes dysfunctional decisions?
Well, I shouldn't be surprised, but I mean, you talk about the number. I mean, all we ask for, I mean, this is the same thing we asked from the Knicks. Just be competitive. Just show us you care. And through 2 weeks, it doesn't feel that way. So I'm going to invest my time watching you play football when you could care less anyway?
Well, you know what? The fans have said no. The fans have loudly spoken, we're not going to. This was the worst-rated Jets game in the history of the franchise this past weekend. And it's week two, guys.
Well, there wasn't too much to be excited about after week one. And then to play a team that I get they were in the Super Bowl, but going into the game, they were decimated by injuries. Secondary was all banged up. No D Ford. They don't have their best wide receivers out. Then all of a sudden, second possession, the quarterback, high ankle sprain, he's gimping around. And he still manages to look better than Sam Darnold on one leg. And you have no chance. I mean, there was no chance to win that game. Zero.
No shot.
None. Game 10 times, you lose that game 10 times.
And you know what really bothers me? And he'll be the next one to go. Avery Williamson will be the next one to go. They'll get rid of him just because he spoke up. But, I mean, what he said, I mean, you wonder why I look so bad. We don't practice to win. Well, guess what? There's no fans. So, I mean, what you're doing on a Sunday is essentially practice against another team. That's what you're doing.
Mm.
So, I mean, if you can't practice against each other, And neither side of the ball is very good anyway. And you're not practicing to win. What the hell's going to happen on Sunday? What do you expect to have happen on Sundays?
Nothing good.
It's going
to
flick a switch.
But Rico, to your point though, that's why the Jets look so apathetic when they're on the field, because the guys in that locker room probably feel like they don't have a chance to win. They don't feel like the coaching staff and Adam Gase in particular is laying out a game plan that gives them a chance to be competitive. That gives them a chance to offset some of their deficiencies with the X's and O's and with the overall play calling. They don't feel like Adam Gase gives them that shot. So if you're a player, you know what the most important thing is? Stay healthy this year. Do my best to try to put out good tape. And then be in a good position come this offseason. Whether the next regime feels like I'm a part of this rebuild or not, I'll make sure that I have some kind of job security in this league. As a player, that's what you think about. And it's unfortunate, man, because you're talking about being 2 weeks into the season. For most teams, everything that they wanted to accomplish this year is still out in front of them. With the Jets, they got no shot. Whatever they thought they were capable of accomplishing, best case scenario this season, that's not going to happen. And it's clear to everybody that's a part of that organization.
Yep. And the viewership shouted that loudly.
You know the part that killed me about what the Jets did on Sunday? And it's not just the way that the team is playing, but I'm looking at their social media account, and they had the nerve at 4 p.m. to put out a tweet of Sam Darnold throwing that last garbage touchdown. And what they said was, we know things aren't going well, but this was a pretty great play by Sam. Who the hell cares about a garbage touchdown in the last minutes of the game
when you're down 31-6?
Yeah. Who cares?
Nobody cares.
That highlight actually gets me more frustrated as a Jets fan, though.
Why? Because he looks like that on any given play?
Well, because you know what he – like, you can see what he's good at. Like, that – what you saw there is what he's good at. When you get him on the edge of the – when you roll him out, he's at his best. Like, that's just – that's where he – that's who he is as a quarterback. And for some reason, we refuse to put him in those situations more often. That was a dime he threw, dude. He's falling towards the sideline, across his body. He throws a dime to Berrios. He's an athletic guy. I got to sit here and watch all these other quarterbacks. Do you have all these plays called where they can show off their athleticism? Sam is an athletic. He was a linebacker in high school, for God's sakes. The kid's an athlete. Let's show it off a little bit. What are you going to do? You can sit in the pocket with a bunch of wide receivers that can't create separation. What are you just going to just sit there and wait and hope? Unless it's an offensive pass interference, there is no separation.
No. And it feels like the fan base is done. It feels like 2 weeks into the season, the fan base, who didn't have a lot of optimism to start, is completely
Well, where's
done.
The juice, Dave? I'm sitting here this morning watching. Did you see Lamar Jackson mic'd up?
Yes.
That dude brings juice to his team. Like that dude brings energy. John Harbaugh brings energy. You got a head coach who, I mean, at one point during that game, I don't know if his back seized up, but he's like bent down looking at his play sheet, like,
You know what? I don't know if you noticed this. There was like a 30-second clip where the Niners were running loose, and they first down after first down, and they panned into Adam Gase, and he's staring with his hat over his eyes, staring at this play sheet, and didn't look up for like 25, 30 seconds, and I was like, what is he doing? Like, look up, show a pulse, and he just was staring at this thing like he was getting, you know, the answers to the meaning of life on it. It was, I don't know, it's very frustrating.
How could you not be frustrated? You got a fan base that didn't like the hire of Adam Gase when you made it. Now, all of a sudden, you saw what you saw in week one. It was a train wreck, and the owner of the team comes out and says he's brilliant.
An offensive genius.
I mean, what are you supposed to do as a fan?
Well,
at that point?
The good news is, though, he's going to turn it to hyperdrive this week. So,
yeah, what is he, Lord Helmet? Ludicrous speed now. I mean, what are we talking about?
Yeah, no, this week hyperdrive.
Hyperdrive.
So,
we'll yeah, you know what? That means. It'd be so much easier starting off 1-1 or 2-0. Let's wait until we're 0-2.
Dave,
Adam Gase misspoke. He didn't mean hyperdrive. He meant hyperdive.
Hyper dive. Yes. I mean, I'm getting tweets right now. Tony tweets. Do you see where we're going to get any wins this entire season? I expect 0-16. Like, the fan base is done. They are done. They're angry. They're frustrated. They're not watching the games. They are done.
Well, the only reason for optimism was your quarterback. I mean, the only reason for any optimism was Sam Darnold. That was it. And I mean, what else do you have to look forward to?
I don't know what.
Mekhi Becton's great.
He is. He's terrific.
I mean, even him. He's begging. Really he's begging Adam Gase. Like, run behind me, boys. Have you seen what I'm doing here? Let's run behind me.
He's mauling people.
Just
out.
He's mauling people.
Huge,
mauling
huge. People. He's exactly what you were hoping he would be at the size that he is. All right. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
No, you're absolutely right, Dave. And I mean, that's a hit for Joe Douglas.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe Douglas had some draft capital. He did the right thing with it. He got a left tackle for his young quarterback. And that's going to be a player that's going to be around for the next decade plus, barring any injury. So
yeah,
you feel good about that. You trust Doug Douglas.
You feel great about that.
Because
looks,
you've seen what he's
great.
Done. What has Adam Gase done to gain the trust of the fan base? Anything?
Absolutely nothing.
Okay.
Absolutely nothing. And let's bring him in. Covers the Jets for us. And you almost feel bad for Rich Cimini at this point. But we welcome him in anyway. And that is the great Rich Cimini. Good morning, Rich.
Good morning.
All right, so let's get right to it. I mean, you've been covering this team for a long, long time. Do you ever remember the fan base this angry, this despondent, and from the ratings, this checked out so early in the season?
I don't know about the ratings part. That seems to be a new one. But, I mean, just go back to last year. I think when they were 1-7, I think the fan base was apoplectic and wanted Gase gone. So this just seems to be a recurring theme here. The ratings were shocking to me, the local TV ratings. I hadn't realized they were that low. But so it's just like Jordan Jenkins said after the game, rinse and repeat. It seems like it's an ongoing thing.
Yeah, but Rich, I thought they were going to carry over the momentum of the 6-2 to finish off the season last year.
That is one of the biggest myths in sports. there's no momentum from the previous year, especially in the NFL. The rosters changed. They played a soft schedule towards the second half of last year, and they did go 6-2. So give them credit for winning most of those games, but there's no such thing as a momentum carryover. Clearly.
Well, Rich, you give them credit where credit is due, but you also have to call them out when they make mistakes. And looking at some of the penalties, the personal fouls that led to scoring drives for the 49ers, to me, that's an indictment on the head coach because it's a lack of discipline overall. I mean, don't you have to put a lot of the struggles of the Jets the last 2 weeks on the head coach? Isn't that where the blame falls?
Ultimately, yes. I mean, they haven't been prepared. I mean, to me, that's the biggest indictment. They've been outscored 42-6 in the first half in games. And granted, they've played better teams, Buffalo and San Francisco. But in the NFL, there's no reason to get blown out in the first half in the NFL. In fact, I looked it up. That point differential, minus 36, is the worst after two games for the Jets at halftime since the 96 Jets, and we all know what happened that year. That was the co-tight year, 1-15. Under no circumstances do you want to be compared to the 96 Jets, but that's exactly the situation we have right now.
All right, so, Rich, week one they get blown out. The owner comes out and really stands up and defends Adam Gase. I mean, is this legitimate? Like, are we really in for a full season of Adam Gase, or is there a chance if this continues to spiral that they can make a change at some point this year?
Well, I mean, that's kind of hypothetical. I mean, I think everything's on the table right now, Dave. I mean, the Johnson family has never fired a coach in season. I think they might have come close a couple of years ago with Todd Bowles when things got really bad toward the end, but they decided to ride it out. I think what Christopher also mentioned last week was how they do have a lot of new parts on offense, especially the offensive line. So I think he's mindful of that. You know, he's mindful of the schedule, pretty tough the first two games. I think he wants to ride this out and see where it goes. Now, if you're telling me they're going to be 1-7 at the midpoint again, then yeah. I mean, I think there could be a change at that point. But I don't think anything is imminent. I think they're just going to see how the schedule softens a little bit here with Indy and then their home against Denver, who will have a backup quarterback. So,
they're 11-point underdogs against Indianapolis, though. Like Vegas is saying, it would be one of the biggest shocks we've seen if they were to beat the Colts next week.
Yeah, I think the Colts are being a little overrated here. I mean, they did play well last week against Cousins, but I think we're anointing the Colts a little early here. They're 1-1. It would be a surprise if they won on the road. I do expect them to play better this week, but I mean, you just want to see you just want to see them go into halftime and be like in the game still. I mean, it's not too much to ask.
Yeah, but they got no juice, Rich. They got no life. I mean, let me ask you, you watch this team practice and everything else. You got players coming out now saying that they don't practice to win games. Like, I mean, Jamal Adams is gone. Like, who won that team? Who's the leader? Who's bringing juice to this team right now?
Well, I do think the Adams situation is a factor. I mean, because he was the catalyst, you know, the energizer bunny, so to speak, that kept everyone going in practice and in games. And I do think they miss him. Clearly, against defending the run, they miss him, I can tell you that. So who are the leader? I mean, Sam is the leader on offense. He's more of an understated guy. He's not a fiery type guy. On defense, you know, Marcus May has stepped in. You know, McClendon is probably the most vocal guy on defense. He is the rah-rah guy. And, I have noticed that they seem kind of lifeless. Maybe it's because of the crowd factor, but, you know, the other team's playing under the same circumstances, not having fans. So, they have looked kind of lifeless, you know, especially early in games.
Rich, there's plenty of negatives to talk about. I want to focus on the few positives that the Jets actually do have. Through the first 2 weeks, Pro Football Focus has Mekhi Becton as the highest graded rookie, and then Quinnen Williams probably plays his best game as a pro, 7 tackles, 2 sacks, and 4 TFLs. What are the people saying internally about those two young guys?
Yeah, no doubt their two last number ones have been playing well. Becton, I mean, look, we all know he had talent coming out as the 11th pick. I think some people are a little surprised that he transitioned this quickly with no preseason games. I mean, he looks like a seasoned veteran out there. I mean, he hasn't made any like glaring mistakes. He hasn't been given up some easy sacks. He hasn't done any of that stuff. So I've been very impressed with him, especially his ability to, and you would know this, Chris, just if he gets beat off the snap initially, he seems like he has that athleticism to recover quickly, you know.
Oh, he did that twice against Nicky Bosa on Sunday. I mean, Bosa goes with that quick inside move, and he just completely washes him down. I mean, he throws him out of the club. I mean, to me, for a big guy, he's got unbelievable feet. Like, he reminds me of a young Jason Peters. That's how great his feet are as a young player.
Yeah, that's, you said it better than I could, but I mean, that's exactly what I was alluding to. I mean, his recovery speed, and he stepped right in. And Quinnen, it was his best game as a pro. The Jets have been, even after the Buffalo game, Greg Williams was saying that they really like the way he's improved, his pocket presence, strong against the run. I think in this game against San Francisco, you finally saw what the fans have been looking for, and that's just some splashy plays, a couple of sacks, a TFL. That's what you want to see from the third pick in the draft, and he finally delivered that.
Rich Cimini with us here, covers the Jets and joining us on 98.7 ESPN. All right, walk us through some of the injuries. Lev Bell's going to be out for a couple more weeks. Sounds like Perriman's not going to play for a week or two. Are we going to get to see a little bit more of Piron? Like, walk us through where we are, especially offensively, Rich, with some of these injuries.
Yeah, I think Piron is, you saw him a little bit at the end last week. He only played 9 snaps. He carried the ball 3 times. I wrote this today on ESPN.com. I think you got to expand his role. I mean, he brings some explosiveness to, some giddy up when he's got the ball. I mean, Frank Gore is, I mean, look, the guy's going to be in Canton someday, so I'm not disrespecting him in any way, but, he still should have a role, but I think you want to see more of Piron. And the receiving core, I mean, Crowder is a question mark this week. I'd probably say 50-50 with the hamstring, whether he goes. If he doesn't, I mean, man, they are, I think they have 3 healthy receivers right now, with Berrios, Hogan, and Josh Malone, who just came up from the practice squad yesterday. So it's dire straits at wide receiver.
Rich Cimini joins us here on the show. Rich, a couple of things from the game against San Francisco. I mean, do I agree with it? No. I mean, Sam Darnold in year 3 should have the ability to check out of a play if he feels like he can get the first down with the QB sneak. But again, Adam Gase is a genius, so he calls the play, players are supposed to execute. You call a play. Why is it the guy you just signed off the prep? Why is it Josh Adams that's getting the carry on 4th-and-1? Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, well, it's a good question that I asked Adam after the game. He said they had Gore had just run 3 straight times, and so he came out of the game. I don't know if he took himself out of the game, but so that was certainly a question. I mean, you put a guy in, for his first carry of the day in a pretty critical situation, 4th-and-1. The breakdown there was the right guard whiffed on his block. Greg Van Roten missed the Mike linebacker. And I pressed Gase again on Monday on the quarterback sneak issue and didn't get a complete answer. I mean, he did say Darnold does not have the option there. I mean, he has to call the play that was called from the sideline, and I never got a real explanation on why he couldn't check out of that. If you look at the tape, he easily could have, there was a huge gap in the center left guard hole. He easily could have fallen forward on a sneak for a first down. Never got a satisfactory answer on why he was not able to do that in that situation.
All right, Rich, the other one is this. Sorry, Chris. The other one is this, just to follow up on that. Why only dress 4 wide receivers for that game?
That was another head scratcher. I think they were going through some roster gymnastics, as we call it, and I guess he felt, I mean, it turned out to be, it backfired, obviously. I mean, because Hogan had to go back in the game with a rib injury just so they could run their offense and have 3 receivers out there. Never really got an answer on that. I suspect that they felt that the fifth guy coming up would have been a practice guy and probably wouldn't have been able to contribute anyway. But yet, it still would have been a wide receiver that you could have used out there. So, and I think they went into the game knowing that they were going to use more two tight ends than they had been in previous weeks, which did turn out to be the case.
Rich, I know we're a long ways off from this, but if this thing approaches 2017 Cleveland Browns territory or 2008 Detroit Lions territory, with the timeline on Sam Darnold's contract and having to make a decision on his fifth-year option and looking at this upcoming draft class with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields at the top of it, if the Jets ended up with the top pick, could we seriously be talking about the Jets moving off of Sam Darnold in favor of one of those younger quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, this is, you know, as you said a moment ago, it's highly speculative at this point. I mean, there's a lot of games to go. But if they did end up with the first pick, I mean, how do you pass on a Trevor Lawrence? You know, from what everyone says, he's a generational player. Sam, I mean, I certainly think he's getting too much blame here. I mean, this is not his fault. I mean, there's no one around him. And Adam's play calling was overly cautious on Sunday. I mean, they really didn't let Sam throw the ball at all downfield. No throws over 20 yards, which is really hard to do in the NFL. But, yeah, I mean, I could see them making that decision. If they had the first pick in the draft, you know, one thing we have to remember here, you know, Joe Douglas says, you know, glorious things about Sam Darnold, how much he loves him and everything, but he did not draft him. And he did not draft Jamal Adams. And there's that bias. You know, every general manager likes the guys they draft. And, you know, he said flowery things about Jamal Adams, too. And look how that turned out. So, yes, I do believe that would be a strong possibility if the Jets got the first pick.
Rich Samini joins us here on the show. Last one for me, Rich. I was told that a healthy Chris Herndon is like a unicorn.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's because you never see a unicorn or not, but what's going on with him through the first 2 weeks? He hasn't been very good.
No, he hasn't. It's been a mystery. I was talking to a scout who was watching the game, and he just said Herndon is just not able to separate like he used to. He just, frankly, seems like he's in a fog out there. I mean, he missed an opportunity in the end zone this week. You know, they have been using him as a blocker a little bit more, so he hasn't been getting as many targets. But I think the coaching staff is a little perplexed as well. This is not the Chris Herndon that we were expecting to see two bad games in a row.
Rich, you say can't separate like he used to. He's what, like 24 years old, 25 years old?
Yeah.
How is that possible that that could be accurate?
Yeah, I don't know. He's not getting open like before. I mean, he had a fumble against Buffalo, which, you know, was a costly play. This week, the drop, he and Sam have a good rapport. And, you know, Herndon was healthy all summer. It's not like he missed any practice time. He has just not been the tight end. I mean, Adam really, really talks up this guy, as you could tell by the unicorn quote. I mean, he really likes Chris Herndon and his upside. But for some reason, like I said, the guy just seems like he's been in a fog the first couple of games. And it's like I said, it's perplexing.
All right, Rich, we appreciate it. We are going to be sure to listen. I mean, you got the big podcast coming out, Flight Deck, on the Jets with Cynthia Freeland. So if nothing else, there's some positivity surrounding the team with the big podcast. So we appreciate it. We'll certainly give it a listen.
All right, great. Thanks so much, guys.
Good stuff. That, of course, is Rich Samini. How about that? Looks like he's lost a step. He's 24.
He's 24. I mean, that's supposed to be, I mean, he was supposed to be the guy. Like, can you imagine if we have a healthy Chris Herndon, that could do for this offense?
Right. Yeah, people all over the place. Like, I start Chris Herndon in fantasy this week. He's a must-start. He had, what, one catch for 6 yards or something?
Yeah, and he had a ball that went off his chest in the end zone.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he meant unicorn. He meant one piece of corn, like a unicorn. Like, it was, he separated the words. Maybe he didn't mean the mythical creature.
I don't know what he meant.
Stop.
He looks terrible. He looks terrible. All right,
the
let's
whole
come
offense
back.
Looks terrible. But the whole offense looks terrible, man.
Terrible.
I mean, he mentions the game plan. That felt like a CYA game plan. Is what that felt like.
Yeah, it felt like they had no idea what they were doing going into that game.
No, it felt like the goal of that game was, let's try to make sure that we limit any possible mistakes from Sam, so we don't hear people screaming and yelling that he's regressing.
But he is.
Who cares if we win or lose? As long as we make sure that the game. You're playing a team whose secondary was depleted, and they lost their two best pass rushers. There was no Dee Ford. You lost Nick Bosa, and there was no Solomon Thomas. If there was any time to take shots down the field against the San Francisco 49ers, it would have been that game.
And the third and nines that you run, like the wide receiver screens, you know, parallel to the line of scrimmage, would make me rip my hair from the roots out of my head. I mean, stop running that play.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking for, like, find a way to make your team believe they have a chance to actually compete. And you know what doesn't do that? Kicking a field goal to keep it a three-possession game.
Awful. They really were absolutely awful. Rick, you got to pick up the slack here today, because Chris and I don't think can. Andy from Merrick with his hockey questions on a hump day. Good morning, Andy.
Good morning, DCR. Dave, let Sherry know the eggs were a little runny this morning.
I will sure tell her. Absolutely.
All right. It is Wednesday. It is hockey day. I got four questions for you regarding all-time games players. All-time games played for various organizations. Starting with the Montreal Canadiens, who is their leading games played player?
Oh, the Canadiens.
It's got to be Henri Richard, no?
It does have to be Henri Richard. Yeah. One for one.
Very nice,
you,
Dave.
David.
CeCe, not singling out here, but I think you got this one. The Washington Capitals, all-time leader in games played.
If you're going to say it to me, then it's got to be super obvious. So I'm going to go with Ovi.
Ovi is correct. 2 for 2.
Look at CC answering hockey questions. My man.
The New York Rangers and their all-time leader in games played is?
Rod Gilbert.
No.
Oh, and it's Leach. Leach.
No. Ah. Leach is second. Hall of Fame defenseman.
It wasn't Leach, huh?
Not Leach. Leach is about 50 games behind Hall of Fame defenseman Harry Howell.
Oh, Howell. Howell.
And finally, Rick's Tampa Bay Lightning. Who is their all-time leader in games played?
What do you mean, my Tampa Bay Lightning? How disrespectful is that?
Well, Milo's, you are Tampa,
Milo's Tampa Bay Lightning.
That's Milo and Cassie. My team just lost to Tampa.
Vinny LeCavalier.
Vincent LeCavalier is correct. Happy hump day, guys. Stay healthy.
Thank you very much. How about that? I missed the Rangers one.
How do you not get the Rangers one?
I didn't think of Harry Howell.
Harry Howell.
Yeah. I thought it would be Gilbert. It's on me.
Pretty solid name, though, too, Harry Howell.
It's a good name.
Yeah.
It's a nice name.
I kind of like that. I don't respect the fact that you got it wrong, but I mean.
I understand you wouldn't.
3-1's
not bad. You know what? Here's the thing, though. I got it wrong. You yelled at me. You had the answer. Yours was also wrong.
Well, I thought it was Leach.
Well, I understand. Well, I thought it was Gilbert.
Yeah, but I was more right than you. Leach played more games than me. Gilbert.
You were more right than me. Yes.
Isn't that the state of New York football, right?
Yes.
The Giants are getting
right
than the Jets.
That's the Giants talking. We're better than you. We stink. You stink worse than we stink.
Dave, 2020 struck again, my man.
Oh, no. Come on.
Yep. Struck again.
What happened now?
Remember the Road Warriors?
Yeah.
Yeah. Animal died.
Come on, man.
Oh, for God's
Animal
sake.
Passed away at age 60. You're only 60.
I can't.
I actually made my mother go buy me the spikes to put on my hockey shoulder pads to be the Road Warriors.
Really?
I love them. Love the Road Warriors.
This is some year, huh?
It's the worst. How good is that?
It's great.
It's unbelievable.
We still have 3 more months of this year.
I know. I didn't even. You guys wish me happy, but I didn't even celebrate my birthday. I'm pushing it.
We're pushing it to 2021.
I'm pushing it. Yeah, I'm not even counting this year.
How many days do we have left in this year?
We have 3 full months and a little election coming up in November.
I just want to count down the days.
Yeah.
I think it's something like 99 days. Let's hurry up and get through this.
Get me out of this year.
It's relentless, man. It doesn't stop.
It goes on forever, too. It's like, stop. Uncle, I give up. I give up.
Yeah, but if this was the Kumite, I'm tapping out.
Yeah.
It's going to be a hell of a celebration on New Year's Eve, right? Just to get out of 2020?
Yeah, if you're allowed to be with people.
Hell of a celebration.
So a hell of a socially distant celebration come December 31st.
DCR is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Catch them weekday mornings at 9 on 98.7 ESPN.